Cornucopia Radio presents.
This special Halloween edition of the Cornucopia Radio Show on Sheffield Live contains drama, music and comedy, which some people may find disturbing or distasteful. If you are unsure, please detune your radio.
Hello and welcome back to Sheffield Live and this year's annual all-night Halloween marathon, where we attempt to keep you entertained and enthralled until the early light of dawn. We're going to start proceedings by having a long discussion with Professor Campbell, Head of Criminal Psychology at the University of Sheffield. Professor, in the last few years there's been a strong increase in the amount of people celebrating Halloween in one form or another. Is this a good thing for society?
Yes. I see nothing wrong with it, as long as everybody respects the rule of law and tries to be respectful to those who do not wish to celebrate the occasion for religious or personal reasons.
So you don't share the viewpoint held by some that Halloween fuels antisocial behaviour and causes a rise in violent behaviour and crime?
These are just the same common scare stories which I hear all the time. I can guarantee you that all the research we have conducted at the university shows no increase in any type of violent crime during this period. In fact, Halloween often acts as a sort of release valve for many people, allowing them to experience darker fantasies in a safe, controlled, publicly celebrated environment.
Well, there was the incident that occurred 10 years ago, though.
The so-called Sheffield killings of October 1999, yes, that was indeed a tragedy. 9 young university students killed on the same night, with only one female survivor remaining. It's an incident I've researched thoroughly and published many books on.
And in case people need reminding, the murderer himself was also killed that night, is that correct?
Yes. The sole female survivor of the night, Julia Cotton, managed to shoot, stab and set fire to the murderer, Charles Lee Ray. Of course, nobody was ever found, but still, there has never been any doubt that he did in fact die that night.
And am I right to believe that various voodoo, pagan and Necronomicon-based books were later found at his house by the police, many of which dealt with the means by which to live and carry out acts of vengeance beyond the veil of death?
Well, this is where everything begins to get a little murky. The police reports have never been publicly released, and many of the officers who investigated the case have refused to discuss any of these facts. But personally, I have doubts. My research has shown that often in violent incidents like this, a great amount of legend and superstition grows around the original crime, until you can no longer tell what is true and what isn't. I guess we can't come to terms with the fact that sometimes human beings can do unspeakable things. We'd much rather blame dark, sinister forces that we can't conveniently explain.
And so I take it you also don't believe in the unexplained deaths and murders across Sheffield which have occurred during every Halloween since?
These are just Halloween spook stories told by students across Sheffield, which I must say, if anything, has been encouraged by local businesses to boost Halloween trade. I noticed one stall at this year's Fright Fest selling nothing but Charles Lee Ray horror masks.
Yes, I guess you're right. Well, if I can now turn to the next subject.
What was that?
I'm not sure, but I think... Hello? Hello? Are we still on air? Okay, it seems we are still on air, but we do seem to have lost all of the lights in the studio. Professor Campbell, are you okay to continue? Professor Campbell? Are you there? Hello? Hello? Who's that in the darkness? Is that you?
To bring you this important message.
Hello, I'm Gary Greenwald, and over the past several years, the Eagle's Nest Ministries has exposed certain things like rock and roll music, Dungeons and Dragons, marijuana, and even the New Age movement, and now we feel there's another attack upon our society.
I went into the internet to just typed in Teen Witches Halloween. There were over 50,000 sites on Halloween and teaching teens how they could get involved in Wicca, how to do hexes, cast spells, tarot card reading, where they could get the witch's Bible from, holy days such as Halloween or Samhain, as it really is known within the pagan world.
To avoid fainting, keep repeating.
It's only a movie.
Well, I believe that it's a direct depiction of Satan and his demon powers and demon friends.
Of course, we have television and the movies that are making horror films and Halloween films more and more acceptable during this particular holiday. I mean, everything's geared to Halloween-type entertainment. We get horror houses. A lot of stuff, in a sense, making death not seem so sinister, making communication with the death not so sinister.
Fight.
Young boys and ghouls in ghoulish disguise. They cover the skin, conceal their eyes.
A great mistake to be held when the ghosts are about. It's Halloween,
a time to be on the rest of the world. They don't observe this ash which has become our biggest concern.
That feels lost.
Yes. streets, begging for treats.
Drowning in a bucket of apples bobbing. Parents are hiding, our babies are sobbing.
I have returned.
The freaking assault! Dragging us down! So we shout!
Help us, save our souls!
We're dying of fear, and they don't even know it.
They think we've got it all. What we need is a team
to help us forget, forget Halloween.
Fools.
Fools.
You think you can stop Halloween?
The world can't hear your useless plea.
It's too late. Our orange and black plague will soon consume them all.
And everyone will understand the true meaning of Halloween.
Pure terror.
Why don't mummies take vacations? They're afraid they'll relax and unwind.
The Cornucopia Radio Show Halloween Takeover on Sheffield Live. We're dead funny.
The night air was cold, and as I rang the doorbell and stood there waiting, I started thinking about how crazy this all was. We had only ever spoken by email, but still, our conversations had grown quite hot and heavy during that time, and it was obvious she wanted the same thing I did. Despite this, I was still nervous. Maybe I should have told somebody where I was going tonight. These internet dating sites always seem to recommend things like that. However, all those thoughts quickly left my mind as she opened the door, smiled at me, and walked back inside, leaving the way open. "You're late," Sally stated. I quickly followed her back to the kitchen. She handed me a drink. I didn't know what to say, so I just stood there and drank deep from the glass. It tasted a little funny, a little bitter, but I continued to drink. After a few seconds of just staring at me, she spoke. "You need to get out of those clothes for a start. Then I can see what I've got to work with, she stated with a wide grin. I swallowed the last of the drink and took a deep breath. What? I asked. This is your idea, she said. I'm willing to go along with it, but you can't go all coy on me about it now. You need to shut up if you want this to happen. I quickly closed my mouth and began to remove my clothes. She watched as I removed each piece nervously. I felt degraded, but hoped that it would be worth it later. Put them there and fold them up neatly. I don't want to touch them. She pointed to a box on the kitchen table. After doing as she requested, I turned back to her and waited. She stared at me for a moment, and then signaled me to come with her finger as she backed down the hallway. It was getting hotter in the house, and I started feeling warm and strangely tired. I realized I had to shake this off quickly. It looked like I was about to have a lot of fun, and I couldn't fall asleep, not at a time like this. Hurry, dear, she said, urging me into the bedroom. But by the time I made it to the doorway, I was almost falling. I braced myself against the door and leaned in. The room seemed empty but for a single sheet of plastic on the floor and what looked like bandages draped in the center. What was she planning? As I started into the room, I felt myself spinning and she quickly caught me just before I fell, slowly guiding me down to the floor, laying me on the gauze in the center. I quickly lost consciousness and everything went black. When I opened my eyes, I found myself totally wrapped head to toe in gauze. She had put something gooey into the bandages as well. It seemed to be some kind of dough. I wanted to scream for help, but I wasn't able to speak. There was something in my mouth, perhaps a gag, but I suspected it was more likely to be another wad of dough. I squirmed a little and tried to feel around for what else was going on, when suddenly I heard her voice from the corner. At last! My little sausage roll is awake, said Sally, delighted to see me conscious. I can finally start stuffing your insides with the filling. Her enthusiasm was starting to frighten me. I didn't want to be stuffed with anything. You're going to get the protein paste injected into your body first, and shortly after, you'll be ready for ginger, she said sprightly. Oh, and don't worry. I've measured just the right amount for your intestines. You won't feel too bad, I promise. She left the room and returned carrying a large plastic bag full of what must have been the protein paste that she spoke of. She hooked it up to the wall near my feet and left the room again, returning with a large tube. She hooked the tube up to the receptacle under my rear and then placed the other end up to the bag, clamping it on tight. I saw the paste slowly making its way down the long tube towards my body. Fear gripped me as I realized it would soon push into my ass and make its way into my guts. Having no way to move, all I could do was sit and wait. Sally sat on a chair dispassionately watching me as the liquid made its way down. I was feeling completely helpless as the first bit of paste slowly started to press into me. It was slow, but thick and seemed to take forever. I started feeling tighter inside the wrappings as the paste swelled inside me. My gut was growing, stretching. After an hour, Sally left the room and returned with yet another bag. I was petrified beyond belief. Now this one goes down into your stomach and will fill the opposite side of your insides. It's also going to absorb all your nasty stomach juices and make you more digestive friendly for ginger, Sally explained calmly. What was going to happen to me? And who or what was ginger? Why did I need to be more digestive friendly? Was I going to be food? Food for what? Sally fed another tube through the dough in my mouth. I felt it hit the back of my throat and gagged as she pushed it deeper into my esophagus, eventually settling itself into my stomach. Even as the other bag was close to finishing, this new bag at my head was just beginning. There was a grey colour to the paste, and I watched the mixture slide down the tube and into my mouth, passing within inches of my eyes, going slowly down into my stomach. I made it myself. It's a mix of whey protein, cornmeal, egg whites, broccoli and vitamin mix. I started off by wrapping smaller animals, you know, rats, guinea pigs, and then finally larger animals like pigs. So you aren't so different, she said proudly. I've also got one other thing you'll appreciate. It's a bone softener. Takes about an hour to fully work, but it'll make your last moments much more relaxing. I got it from a guy I met in South America, not so far from where I found Ginger. She brought a pouch of what looked like saline into the room and hooked it into an IV that was already in my arm. It burned going in and seemed to sting every inch of my body. It was bad enough that the paste in my stomach was almost full and cutting off my breathing, but now this bone softener was doing something else. I felt my hips go limp, and all at once I felt my entire body slump into itself as the growing pace pushed my soft bones out of the way. My entire body went numb. I felt nothing. Nothing but the pace moving around inside me. She started dragging me out of the room and into the hall, struggling to get me to move. When she reached the last room along the corridor, she opened the door and pushed me inside before locking the door and leaving me alone. It was quiet and dark. However, I could smell something foul in the air. Something animal. Something not human. What exactly did she have in here with me? I couldn't move anything. Every one of my muscles had completely shut down. I was nothing but a flesh-covered ball of paste. It was then that I heard the side door slide open and saw beyond it into another whole room. In this room, I could just about make out some kind of shape moving in the darkness. It took a while until I could make out what it was, but eventually it became clear. It was a snake, a giant snake. With this realization, my fate was sealed. I was snake food. The snake didn't come near me for the first hour. I just laid there, waiting for it to get closer. After some time, the snake started circling my body, rubbing closer to my cocoon, feeling my warmth. It was about 30 to 40 inches round its center and at least 10 meters in length, easily big enough to finish me off. Eventually, the snake finally decided to start its dinner. It lifted my ankles and started sliding under me, circling three more times around my body, lifting me up and moving me as it did, dragging me back into its lair. It started getting tighter around my body, squeezing me firmly. The paste inside me began to slosh up and down my body cavity as the pressure moved to different parts of my cocoon. I gagged as it began squeezing tighter still, and I knew it was about to swallow me. I felt the pressure at my feet as it unlocked its jaw around my calves. It slowly worked me forward into its mouth, walking its jaws up my legs. It then slowly went over my thighs as it constricted on my feet, and I felt myself being pulled powerfully downward. I was living a waking nightmare, and I prayed to be put out of my misery, out of my torture. Soon, Ginger was up to my stomach as the paste inside my body started bulging upwards and I felt my chest and neck swell. Ginger's jaw opened even wider and topped the bulge, leveling out instantly. Quickly, I slid in up to my neck. This was it, I thought. One or two more contractions, and I was done for. It seemed like such a long time, but it probably only took a second. Ginger contracted on me, and I slid deeper under its nose. Once my head was in her mouth, I started feeling the dribbles of its breath on my head. Another contraction, and I was in the dark. Ginger closed her mouth, and I felt the contraction starting again, pulling me deeper, the muscles of her stomach tightly pressing into my face. I was starving for air. I couldn't breathe. I felt the muscles squeezing tighter and tighter as I was pulled deeper and deeper, and then nothing. Sally picked up the box of clothes and carried them to the fireplace, throwing them onto the hot coals. Returning to the viewing room, she looked through the window into Ginger's lair and smiled. Ginger was the best pet Sally had ever owned, and she'd do anything to make her happy. Anything.
As you have heard me say on this telecast many times, there is a spiritual war in this nation for the souls of our children.
Sanguis minimus.
Halloween is a potential doorway. Children become desensitized to the horrors. They become desensitized to the fear attached to death. Think of that night where so many people are terrified of being in their homes. I mean, they lock their houses, close up their doors, and don't even want to be home at this night.
Section 1. To build this wardrobe, you will need an Allen key, an adapter post, a small saw, tape measure, some super glue, a 10mm ball end hex key set, a ratchet, spirit level, a blowtorch, a large bottle of ether, a pagan ceremonial knife, a flux capacitor, and the arms of a small child which bend at a reverse 72 degree angle. Section 2. To prepare, lay out all the pieces in front of you, and judging by the amount of wood panels you unpacked for the wardrobe, briefly consider building a full-size replica of a Noah's Ark instead. Section 3. Realize you can't find where you've put the superglue. Section 4. Realize you're sat on the superglue. Section 5. Begin by attaching piece A to piece D. Use piece G to level across piece F. Piece B should fit into piece C via the dowels, which should now be visible from piece D. Hinge 1, which is perpendicular to hinge 3, should be lined up with the two runners on piece G. Bracket X, which is connected to poles C, should now be facing magnetic north, while sprocket A and B should now be vertical in a way which directly violates Newton's first law of physics. Thankfully, for your benefit, we have not labelled any of these identical looking pieces. Section 6. After this, pin the hinge, cork the pin, nail the tack, skewer and staple the rivet, and clamp the ratchet bolted unbolted hook anchor. Wonder if the Mandarin instructions on the other side make more sense. Section 7. You should decide to take a 5-minute break at this point, ideally while opening a can of beer with index finger 4 and looking at the picture on the front of the box, while lazily trying to screw part K into section P using just your feet. After looking at the picture on the box and then looking at the pieces on the floor, realize they've sent you the pine version instead of the mahogany one you asked for. You may wish to kick and break piece F, which is connected to piece E via bracket 3, the only section you're pretty sure you've actually done correctly.
Ah!
Section 8. Give up and continue to hang your clothes on the back of a chair.
I spy with my little eye.
Stars?
Nope.
Let me guess. What else could it possibly be? Space, perhaps?
Yeah. Wow. You're getting really good at this. Okay, Rogers. Your turn.
Not interested.
Well, do you want me to have another go, then?
No.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star.
Look, will you just shut the hell up?
What?
3 months. 3 months out from Earth, and I'm already sick of you.
Sick of me? Really? I thought we were getting on quite well.
Quite well. Quite well. There's nothing I like about you. Nothing. From the stupid, inane games, all the way through to your tuneless singing. And don't even get me started on the disgusting way you pick at your teeth after every meal.
There is no excuse for letting harmful plaque build up on your teeth, is there?
I could save you the bother.
Really? How?
I'll knock them all out, and you can keep them safe and sound in a plastic bag.
Oh my God! I don't believe it! Look out the window! Look at this!
What now?
It's incredible! I've never seen anything like it before!
What is it?
God, this is amazing! Where did we put the damn camera?
What? I can't see anything. There's nothing there.
It's the majesty of space. Isn't it incredible?
You do it to me every time.
Calm down, pal. We've got another year and a half before we reach Mars. No sense in getting too stressed out.
I'm not sure we will be reaching Mars at all.
I keep telling you, calm down. Trust the rocket scientists. This is their job. They'll get us there. That's the secret to avoiding going space crazy. Just stay calm.
I would be calm if it wasn't for you and all your irritating habits. Why they saddled me with a moron like you on a 3-year round trip is beyond anybody.
Don't forget the year we'll spend on the surface, building the habitation domes. That'll be fun, won't it?
That's it. I can't do it. I just can't. Not another 3 years with you. Forget space crazy. You'll send me over the edge all by yourself. I'm gonna call Earth. Tell them I'm aborting the mission.
Won't do any good.
Why not?
They have us control locked on autopilot until the Mars approach. Besides, with the distance we are from Earth, you won't get instantaneous communication. A couple of minutes for control to receive it. Then they'll transcribe your message and put it into committee. They'll take a week to consider it, and then another week to formulate their reply. Which will be an almost certain no.
I'll talk them round.
With a fortnight between each sentence? I don't think so. Nope, it's just you, me, and the vastness of the cosmos. Sit back and enjoy it. That's my advice.
You want me to go mad, don't you? Admit it.
Who says you aren't already mad?
Oh, no you don't. You're not getting me that easily. I know I'm still sane. I'm not mad. You're the one who's unstable. I just can't understand how they let someone like you through the Astro Training Program in the first place.
Well, I did have an uncle on the selection committee.
Ah, I knew it. Preferential treatment. I knew something was up.
No, that's not it. You see, he didn't like me either. Kept saying he wanted me off the planet one way or another. Still not quite sure what he meant by that.
The computer! A message from Earth!
Probably just someone trying to sell us double glazing.
Please be aware, this is a pre-recorded message from Control.
I'm afraid there's no one here to take your call right now.
Shut up! This is important.
By the time you receive this message, you should be approximately 3 months out from Earth. Psychologists estimate this is the point where claustrophobia will begin to set in. We thought some communication from us would help you fight
you're right. Not a moment too soon.
Everybody here at Control wants you to know that we're all thinking of you up there, rocketing through space. And we are all sending you our best wishes, Rogers. You're a brave man to take on such a lonely solo mission as this.
What do they mean? Solo mission? There's two of us. Isn't there?
I said you were going mad, didn't I?
No! No! No!
What do you call two witches living together? Roommates.
The Cornucopia Radio Show Halloween Takeover on Sheffield Live. We're dead funny.
A peculiar thing happened to me this morning, Helium. Just as I reached into my pocket to find it empty of any sow, I saw two broken twigs on the ground, shaped like the Greek letters F and S. F and S, Helium. F and S. These are the chemical symbols for iron and sulfur. It was a sign, I'm sure, for me to make gold from these two elements. I have been working all day over these hellish flames. My chopped hands have become poisoned.
Poison!
They are black and bleeding.
Poison!
Black as is my need, bleeding as is my heart. The agony becomes intolerable. There is no hope of a single lasting happiness in this life, since we are already in hell. My soul is empty. I am dead to the world.
Vampire is that people will not believe in him.
Thank you for coming. No, I won't shake hands, thanks. Well, this is it. I used to live here. This used to be a row of terraced houses on one side and a row of back-to-backs on the other. This is number 5. Not a back-to-back, oh no. This was one of the posher houses. It was my grandfather's house, and it passed down the line to my father. He owned it for the rest of his life. And then it became mine. Mine was a normal household. We only had 6 children, 2 girls, half Annie and Selina, plus the 4 boys, James, William, Robert, he was named after his father, and our John. That's where John used to work before the war. The local butcher offered him a job, and he soon became known to the neighbourhood riding the delivery bicycle around the area. I used to live here. The street was cobbled in those days. You'd see the occasional hansom bring the doctor, but it wasn't an everyday happening. Old Ma Riley would listen out for the sound of hooves and stand by the door in expectation, hoping for a little something for the pots of flowers in the court. Sometimes she was lucky like that. Her George was wounded fighting. It was her Walter who was on the Titanic. Sad that was. Selina worked for the local draper before she married and moved away. Fanny was the clever one. She was a pupil teacher before becoming a full-time teacher. But not round here. She moved away. We didn't see much of her after that. It was the family at number 4 who had the crippled boy. Young Daniel Potter. Polio it was when he was 6. Number 6 was where the Bird family lived. Trevor worked on the trams like his father did before him. And there, that's where Emma Robinson lived. Her Herbert used to work as a table knife halter. They had 3 boys. They played on the street when they were small. Not that anyone does now. They'd use a fruit crate for a wicket in the cricket games. When the ball hit her window, Ma Riley would come out and shout at him. The Robinson boys all went into cutlery. I used to live here. Looking at this new building, you'd hardly credit it with being home for us back then. 8 houses in the court and 1 pump. Fine red bricks they were, but you'd need one of Worcester Home's finest to scrape off the soot. Number 8 was over there. Doris White lived there. She had 3 daughters. I never saw Mr. White. Some say he was killed in a mining accident, but others say he died of TB. I bet Doris thought she'd get more sympathy by making up the story of the accident. Doris trained as a midwife. She brought quite a few into the world. Not like Emily Roberts. That was where Emily Roberts used to live. She was always being called on to lay people out. I expect she would have done... No, maybe not. She needed a body to work with. I used to live here. Our boys went off to fight the Hun, but they didn't come home. I never heard the bombs that fell that night during the war. I used to live. Here.
Girlfriend, you take care of her.
How many people who say they know Jesus Christ can actually allow their children to celebrate Halloween? Halloween is an offence. It's idolatry. It's associated with worship of Satan and witchcraft.
Why do ghosts like to ride elevators? It raises their spirits.
The Cornucopia Radio Show Halloween Takeover on Sheffield Live. We're dead funny.
I was trying to think the other day about how old I must have been when I first heard about it. It's odd. Something like that, you think, would be pretty much seared into my very cortex. But no. I guess I was maybe 7 or 8. I do recall a friend at school saying her uncle had bought one, and she'd seen it herself. Of course, we all know how kids lie. And looking back now, I suspect at that age, she wouldn't have recognised one if it had been sat right next to her. But I was young, and I always believed everything anybody ever told me. You see, as a child, you begin to realise that there are lots of things that grown-ups have to do that you don't. And one day, perhaps, when you're taller, older, and sadly a bit fatter, things will change. As a kid, it made perfect sense, as almost all things do for kids. Then, of course, as you enter your teens, you begin to question things more. You want to know the why as much as the how. I remember it seeming odd that everybody talked about this thing, yet nobody could ever tell me what it looked like. People were always vague when they talked about it, never really making it clear if they did actually own it, or once had it, or secretly longed for it. However, it quickly became clear to me that if anybody did have it, well, they were keeping it very secret. Also, I had always assumed that it was something you had to buy. After all, how else could you get it? But the stories I have heard or read seem to suggest that some people had been given it. Some people had simply found it. But most worryingly of all, some people had stolen it. Once I knew this, I of course realised why everybody was always so mysterious as to whether they had it or not. Or to admit you have it, or to show it to other people, was almost like asking somebody to take it away from you. So, as I left my teenage years and strode into adulthood, I found myself living in a world obsessed by it. And this despite the fact that its image had never been worse. After all, as an object, soft and faulty, and looks out of place no matter where you keep it. As a service, it's frequently slow and rarely up to the task at hand. And as a concept, well, perhaps its time has simply passed. Still, maybe I'm wrong. Many will tell you it's the greatest thing humanity has ever held in its grasp. It saves many more lives than it kills. It's brought so many together who would otherwise be alone. And the amazing advances in production means it is now small enough to hold in the palm of your hand. But ultimately, I guess I'm still none more the wiser than my 8-year-old friend was all those years ago. I'm not even sure if I've ever really wanted it. Was it just the fact that everybody else had it? I don't have it. Just in case any of you are thinking that. I've never been able to save up enough money. I just don't know the right people. And a life of crime seems, well, too much like hard work. I suspect somebody listening right now could have one. You strike me as the type of people that might. Although, that's not a criticism. You are who you are. I can hardly judge. Can I? However, maybe this is just what I want you to think. If I did have one, or wouldn't this be the perfect way to hide it from you? Talking on the radio like this, as if I had no clue or desire. Maybe it sat next to me right now. Maybe. Whether you think I have it or not, whether anybody really has it, or whether something you've never seen can ever truly exist, just try to keep in mind there are millions of things you could have. So why limit yourself to just one? I guess ultimately you've just got to learn to think for yourself and not follow a MacGuffin.
The Cornucopia Radio Show Halloween Special was created. and directed by Peter Beeston. It was performed by Andrew Martin, Andy Finity, Graham Rogers, Carol Mack, David Cox, Andrew Hopton, Alan Robinson, and Ina Lees. It was written by Peter Beeston, with additional material by Andrew Callow. This has been a Cornucopia production for Sheffield Live, copyright 2009. On our tombstone, it will read, "Not dead, just resting."